Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Sports Time Radio, and we're going to try to come rolling out of the box just like the St. Louis Cardinals did today. So, as you know, I'm the Big Jack with Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so sure enough, had a brand new one pop up over there this morning. If you haven't been over there, swing on by, check it out. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate it. Don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are out there on Twitter as well. I am at Sports Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with 3 E's.
So, all right, Dan, we were discussing before we started that I actually missed the first, couldn't have been more than the first few minutes of the Braves-Cardinals game. For some reason, I thought they had a 4:30 start, and it was a 4 o'clock start. And by the time I turned it on, it was already 4-0. St. Louis got off to a fantastic start. I proceeded to watch them add 6 more runs in the first inning, which is the most first inning runs in postseason history. It's also the most runs in any inning in a winner-take-all game. Tied the record for most runs in any inning, which has been done 3 times before. So, I Mike Foltynewicz made the start for the Braves. Lasted a third of an inning, only gave up 3 hits, but 7 runs, 6 were earned. He walked 3 guys. Bold prediction, Dan. You got the Braves coming back?
Not unless everyone hits the home run for 2 innings straight, or it's 18 batters. We got to get that.
Yeah, and oddly in the, this era of baseball, the Cardinals, it's now 13-0. They added a run in the second and 2 in the third. The Cardinals have done this without a home run, Dan, if you can believe that.
That was something that was brought up. I don't remember what day it was over the last couple of days, which some of these teams, but that's how you win. It's not all about the home run, despite what they all think.
Yeah, to be fair, they do have 4 doubles and a triple. Nothing has made it out of the park yet, and they've been very patient. Over 3 innings, they have 5 walks. So yeah, it's been it's been a little ugly. So far so good for Jack Flaherty. He's got 3 complete right now. Just 1 hit, struck out 4. He's walked 1. His pitch count is at 47. So he right now he's on pace to, rack up 6 or 7 innings if that's where they want him to go. I believe the Braves are on their 4th pitcher now, as I believe Josh Tomlin. Yeah, is in the game now. So I don't know. The Braves may set a record for pitchers used the way it's going. I mean, Foltynewicz lasted a third of an inning. They brought in another starter, Max Fried, who didn't have any better luck. He did last an inning and 2/3. They turned to Luke Jackson, who was a former closer. He gave up a couple runs, only lasted 2/3 of an inning. Tomlin had to come in to finish the third, and now he's out to start the 4th. He is a former starter in the Indians organization. I know he's been a reliever for the Braves all year. So maybe he can give them some innings and get some outs. But, man, it's just UGLY here, Dan. I don't know how else to describe it.
And they don't have no alibi, that's for sure.
Yeah. I was wondering if you were going to get that. I was like, will he understand this if I throw this up there? You know, I never know with what I start to think. But, yeah, I guess we'll kind of wait and see how it goes. I mean, the Braves do have six more chances to pick up some runs. So, you know, I hate to say they're out of it, but it could be, not only could they be going home, they could be going home in very ugly fashion.
While I was sitting at work, I overheard someone say, oh, my God, Cardinals are up 9-0. I got to check the score real quick. I was going to throw it on. But I was on a call, so when I got off, I checked again, and it was the second inning, and it was 11-0. And I'm like, yeah, there's no problem. I'm not even turning this on.
it's really the Cardinals order, obviously, you know, they've collected a few hits. You know, they have 9 in the game. But Edmund, whose first name I can't remember, I want to say Tommy, him and Paul DeJong are the only guy with multiple hits so far. They each have 2. So we'll see if some other guys can add on. But, Dexter Fowler, he picked up a hit, a couple RBIs, and he drew a big walk. Oh, Colton Wong does have 2 hits as well. So it's really been hugely offensive for the Cardinals. And, you look at their lineup, and you go, oh, yeah, they've got a really good lineup. But, man, I wasn't expecting this. So, I did find it interesting. I kind of get your take on this. You know, the Cardinals put up the Big Ten spot in the first inning, and when they went out, their manager, Mike Schilt, he made changes, and he put his best defensive lineup in. He inserted Harrison Bader into Matt Carpenter's spot in the order, but Bader went to center. That bumped Dexter Fowler to right, and then Edmund came in to play third base. So after getting the big lead, he automatically switched to what you have to consider is the Cardinals' best defensive lineup. Did you like that, the way he kind of did that, or do you think maybe he jumped the gun a little bit?
I think it's a little preemptive. But, I mean, I don't know. At the same time, he's just trying to protect that lead and not wanting to blow anything like that.
Yeah, well, I guess the weirdest part to me is, last year, Matt Carpenter was a borderline MVP candidate in the National League, and this year he's more or less a part-time player on the, on the NL Central champion. So it's just kind of strange how, and this is something the Cardinals have always done. I mean, they've never had an issue with, shuffling guys if they don't think they're that guy anymore, or, letting a big-time free agent walk. They've never really had an issue with it, and I know Carpenter's had a slew of injuries, so maybe he's just dinked up. But it's still strange to me when I see it, and it's like, oh well, Matt Carpenter got the he drew a walk, he drew a walk with the bases loaded, so he got an RBI, and then he scored a run later in the first, and then they took him out of the game. So. But I guess maybe that's, just me. we'll see. But I want to, you know, I want to jump back to last night here, Dan. You know, we've discussed it multiple times here, and you know, I don't like all the fuss they make about the opener. I mean, you know, to me, I'm still convinced that it's just a crock, and it's just more or less a, you know, a team couldn't find a way to round out its stats. So it's basically a bullpen day. But to give the Rays some credit, I don't think it could have worked out any better for them last night. Do you?
No, not one bit. I think I was almost sitting there with my, you know, jaw open the whole time, my mouth on the ground, like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, you know, and I mean, it was another situation, you know, Castillo got out of the first relatively easily. And then, the Rays went out and they put up three runs on Verlander, which I wasn't expecting. I was a little surprised they didn't let Castillo finish the second inning. He was only at 29 pitches. He had only thrown an inning and two-thirds, obviously, as the opener. But, you know, they stuck with their plan. Ryan Yarbrough came in for two. They went to Nick Anderson for two. Ponce, whose first name I'm drawing a blank on, came in for an inning and a third, or an inning and two-thirds. The only guy who gave up a run, and I was surprised they used him, because I believe he had pitched in game two and three. I thought maybe they would skip him tonight. Then they brought their closer in Pagan. Thought they were going to let him go for the four-out save, but oddly, they turned to Blake Snell to get the final two outs. Snell throws eight pitches, strikes out a guy, and picks up a save. I know Tyler Glasnow is scheduled to start game five, but you got to figure after two-thirds of an inning, Snell's ready to go in the bullpen again, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I was kind of surprised they went with Snell. So
yeah, I was
–
Yeah, I mean, I was being honest. You know, and, you know, you look at their pitch count, and nobody threw, you know, Castillo threw the most pitches at 29. You know, otherwise it was 22, 22, 21, 20, and then 8 from Snell. So, yeah, I mean, I guess they stayed with the plan, if you want to call it, and it worked out fantastic. I think it helped if they got the lead right away. It's still not going to convert me as a fan of the opener or buying that it's a legitimate, you know, way to go about things. But, like I said, you got to give credit where credit's due, and it worked out for them.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed that the other day about, you know, strategy-wise, how well it was going to play out. And, you know, it kind of, well, I think it definitely played out a hell of a lot better than I expected it to. I don't know, would you say you're more surprised by how well the Rays pitched, or more surprised at how well their bats went as opposed to the Astros? You know, I guess that's what threw you off more than anything? Was it Verlander, Tampa's pitching, or the lack of hitting on the Astros side?
Yeah, you know, the thing that surprised me the most was Verlander. He made the mistake to Pham and he gave up the home run. And I immediately just kind of thought, okay, he realized what happened. He's going to settle down. And, you know, I thought that's probably going to be the only run he was going to give up. And then he goes out and he not only gives up two more runs in the first inning, you know, he turns around and he gives up another one in the fourth on a Willy Adames home run of all guys. Just, you know, I believe I heard somebody say it was Verlander's worst postseason outing, and, you know, obviously, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but we're looking here that the start on 3 days rest was a terrible idea, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, and that was something that I think AJ was just very on point with all of his comments. As, you know, it was kind of, I don't want to say it was funny, but as AJ described, you know, the things that might happen to a pitcher and his frame of reference that went on 3 days rest, all the negatives came true. You know, and he even threw out there, he's like, you can't, you know, regardless of how great of a pitcher you are, these are all major league hitters, and you can't just toss it up there right over the plate and expect them to whiff.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, did not go the way I think anybody expected. I mean, Verlander threw 84 pitches in just 3 2/3 innings. Ended up with 7 hits, 4 runs. They were all earned. He walked 3, struck out 5, and gave up 2 bombs. You know, and I mean, it just wasn't, you know, anything close. I mean, obviously it didn't help that, you know, the Astros only managed to pick up, you know, 1 run, and in reality it was a meaningless run in the 8th inning. You know, I mean, by then, you know, while they weren't out of the game, they were kind of out of the game. They only ended up with 6 hits. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, on the plus side, they're going home where, you know, they've got a, you know, I think one of the best records in baseball. Well, I know they had the best record overall, but I believe they may have had the best home record as well. If my internet wants to cooperate, I can see if I can check that really quick. But, yeah, I don't know. You know, do you give the Rays, you know, what they would call a puncher's chance here in Game 5 tomorrow?
You know, if it was a 3-4-3-3-2, I would say no. But after last night's performance, yeah, I'm kind of giving them a better chance to knock the Astros out.
So, yeah, the Astros, I was correct. They had the best home record. They were 60-21 at home. But to be fair, the Rays weren't too bad on the road here. It looks like they had the second best road record in baseball at 48-33. So, you know, maybe they, you know, they could kind of hang around. I mean, obviously it's going to be a tough go. They're going to get Gerrit Cole, who's, you know, I mean, made things look easy in game 2, and, you know, he's on regular rest. It won't be short rest. That was the one positive about Verlander going on 3 days was it allowed to Cole to stay in his normal rotation. Otherwise, it could have been Cole on short rest and Verlander on short rest, and who knows how that would have worked out. I don't know. You got to give the Astros a little bit of an advantage here, right? I mean, you're leaning that way, like we were yesterday.
They definitely. Wasn't that Monday they played?
I can never remember.
I don't know. No, maybe right yesterday. Because we're going to play tomorrow. Never mind. I'm thinking they're playing today. No, I still have the edge going to the Astros. But I think the Rays definitely shown and proven that you can't take them serious.
Yeah, it just kind of could be kind of interesting. I did see the Braves got on the board, Dan. They're starting to come back 13-1. So, you know, here they go. But yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see if the Rays have one more in them. So, and then we, you know, obviously we have our next game five later tonight where, you know, the Dodgers, they head back home. They're taking on the Nationals. It's going to be a Walker Buehler against Steven Strasburg. So we'll see how that works out. And I saw somebody posted the Dodgers went with an interesting lineup tonight. I want to see if I can get it here and see what you think. All right, here you go, Dan. Here's the Dodgers lineup for tonight. Jock Peterson leading off and right. Max Muncy batting second at second. Justin Turner hits third and plays third. Cody Bellinger is the cleanup hitter in center. Matt Beattie hits fifth at first. Corey Seager hits sixth short. Your guy Kiki in the lineup going to hit seventh and play left field. Will Smith's doing the catching and hitting eighth. And then, of course, the pitcher Buehler is hitting ninth. You liking that against Strasburg and the Nationals? I mean, it will be, you know, a couple lefties right out of the gate before the right-handed hitting Turner. So you on that lineup? You like this lineup?
I'm not. I don't think.
Yeah. you know, a lot of guys are like kind of a small sample size, but really the only guy in the Dodger lineup who's had any success against Strasburg at all has been Justin Turner. He's got a .286 career average. Other than that, nobody's hitting better than like .222. So, you know, we'll have to see. To be fair, Matt Beattie is hitting .500, but he's only had two at-bats against them. So yeah, we'll have to, you know, we'll have to see how that that kind of shakes out. And on the other side, the Nationals are countering with Trey Turner leading off at short, Adam Eaton batting second in right field, Anthony Rendon hits third at third base, Juan Soto's the cleanup hitter in left, Howie Kendrick gets the start at second, he'll hit fifth, Ryan Zimmerman at first base, he'll hit sixth. Kurt Suzuki gets the catching call tonight, hit seventh. Michael Taylor in center field's hitting eighth, and then, of course, Strasburg hitting ninth. Not a big sample size against Buehler. Nobody has more than six career at-bats, so it's hard to really call anything. But Anthony Rendon is 3-for-6 in his career against them. Dan, this is a tough one to peg. You know, both pitchers were really good in their first outing. You know, they both went six innings. Buehler only gave up the one hit. Strasburg struck out 10. I don't know. How do you handicap this tonight? I mean, does one team kind of favor another for you here?
I mean, this is rough. I obviously still favor the Dodgers. But, I mean, I still think it can go either way.
You know, and the Dodgers have also announced that Clayton Kershaw is available out of the bullpen. And there are quite a few reports, and obviously the Dodgers didn't say this, but there are quite a few reports out there of people who are close to the team that believe Kershaw will follow Buehler. No matter what the situation is, no matter how many innings Buehler gives them, you know, unless, you know, of course he goes eight, because then my guess is they're going to Kenley Jansen. But, you know, if you see Buehler going six again, don't be surprised if it's Kershaw for 7 and 8. And then if they're winning, they go to Jansen for the ninth. Because that Dodger bullpen, especially the likes of, you know, Pedro Baez, Joe Kelly, Julio Urias, and Ross Stripling have been really, and I mean really bad. So I don't know if you can turn to them in this situation. Can you? You've got to – I mean, it's all hands on deck, right?
On deck. You've got to imagine Buehler doesn't even make it to sixth inning. He he makes it 5-4-5, and then you're pulling in Clayton Kershaw.
So, yeah, you know, and then the Nationals, I would be surprised to see Max Scherzer pitch with all the work he's done so far this series. But I won't be surprised if we see Patrick Corbin, even though he was embarrassingly bad out of the bullpen in his last appearance. I mean, at this point, you've got to figure out how to move on. So, would you be surprised if we see Corbin as well out of the Nationals bullpen?
No, not at all. You've got to go with your best foot forward, and this goes for both teams. But if you get Scherzer in, and the Nats win, or you get Clayton in, and then the Dodgers win, who's your game one starter against the Cardinals on Friday? Sorry, Brady.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, how many? You know how many days off is that?
It's on Friday.
Okay, so it is a quick turnaround. I guess you could you come back with Ryu? I would guess with the Dodgers would have to go.
Yeah, and just to update you for this second round of MLB playoffs, Big Jack, this isn't the NBA.
What?
Sorry. I said this isn't the NBA.
So, I'm trying to think. Yeah, because I don't think. I don't think the Dodgers wouldn't. I know Rich Hill only went like three innings or so, but I don't think you could bring him back, and he wasn't very good. So yeah, I would guess you would go to. You could go to Ryu, or I guess in reality you could actually throw Kenta Maeda out there. I know he's been really good out of your bullpen, but obviously he was a starter all year. So, that's the one thing the Dodgers are blessed with is they do have starting pitching to spare. I mean, besides Maeda, Ross Stripling can start. They could even use Urias if they had to, in the starting role. I mean, I don't know how many innings you could get out of Urias or Stripling, but you could probably get three or four if they were rolling, maybe even stretch them to five. So they'll have some options, but I guess first they got to figure out how the hell to get by Washington, right?
Oh, yeah.
And this is the big thing, Dan. I was trying to kind of figure out the best way to explain this when I was writing the blog this morning, and I don't think I did a very good job. So I'm hoping you can enlighten us a little here. If the Dodgers lose or the Astros lose or both teams lose, how do you quantify their season in a whole? I mean, the Dodgers had, I believe, the best record in the National League. The Astros had the best record in baseball. If they both go out in the division round here, how do you kind of put that season in a nutshell? Because, I mean, it could happen.
It could happen, but I think it also just reaffirms that best record in the game during regular season doesn't guarantee you championship. I mean, you know that. The Mariners, I think, hold the record. Didn't win the World Series with Lou up there in Washington. I mean, go back a couple of years, and the Warriors have the best record in NBA history, and they lost, but they also lost because of poor officiating. That's another story in itself. But, I think to sum it up, I think they're in a better place than the Angels and the Nationals were in 2014.
Yeah, and then, to kind of flip that, say the Nationals do win this, how does that make them look since they basically lost out on the Bryce Harper sweepstakes, but they'll actually be going forward in the playoffs, which I believe is something they never did with Harper. was actually win a playoff series. I think they got there a few times. I don't believe they ever won one with them. Obviously, I mean, you know, you and I both know it takes more than one guy to kind of, you know, lead a team or deal with a team. But how do you think that kind of looked on him?
I mean, I think it definitely, I don't want to say it lowers his value, but I think the one thing, not just him alone, I think the media and fans have to be a little bit smarter and quit hoping to sign these big names. You know, just because they have some sort of name value. I mean, the numbers that Bryce Harper put up 25 years ago, he wouldn't be at the upper echelon of the game.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I mean, depending on who you talk to, there's questions on if he's like at the upper echelon of the game, not the numbers he put. I mean, obviously the power numbers are fantastic, but, you know, there's a lot of you know, other questions that go with what he does. That, you know, you got to kind of wonder about. So, you know, and then, we kind of flip it back to the American League, you know, with Gerrit Cole starting, you know, if he goes out and has another outing, like I believe he had 15 strikeouts in his first start against the Rays. You know, if he goes out and has another monster game and doesn't allow him to score and puts up double-digit strikeouts, how much money is this guy making himself? Because he's going to be a free agent. So it's kind of a two-pronged question, Dan. How much money is he making himself? And can the Astros afford to bring him back with Verlander and Greinke already under contract for $30-plus million a year?
I'm going to go with a no. On the second question, and then I think we're looking at, 32 on average a year. But I'll be back shortly.
So, yeah, that's some of the things that kind of jump out. And, you know, just a quick update, it's the bottom of the fifth, and the Cardinals are still up 13-1. So that's still going. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, an interesting scenario with some of these guys. And, I mean, there are a lot of guys in this particular series, that if they do well, they could really cash in the off season. Obviously, Gerrit Cole is one of the obvious ones, but don't forget, there's Anthony Rendon, who the Nationals have already thrown quite a bit of money at to try to get him to stay. So, we'll have to see how that goes. You know, the Braves have a couple guys, Josh Donaldson has had a bit of a bounce back year. I don't know, I know he hit a lot of home runs, but I think we're going to be able to say that about everybody this off season. I know, the Braves have been grooming Austin Riley. He was supposed to be the guy to take over next year, but there's been some talk that, they want Donaldson back. The problem is he came in on a one-year deal this year, and I don't think he'll be willing to do that again. Do the Braves bring him in on a multi-year deal and continue to play Riley in the outfield, or you got to kind of wonder there. And then of course there's the Dallas Keuchel effect. They picked him up. That's the team where he went after the fiasco of not being able to get signed in the off season because, well, let's face it, his agent was an idiot and he made poor choices. But he made 19 regular season starts, 8-8 with a 3.75 ERA. So he was solid. I don't want to say he was good. In the National League, you need a little lower ERA. But again, we were dealing with a juiced baseball. you gotta wonder, you know, if there's a cash in for, you know, for Keuchel down the road here. Finally, you know, we just talked to him a little bit ago. Hyun-Jin Ryu is headed back into free agency. Last year, he took the Dodgers qualifying offer, but you know, he had a fantastic season, and I mean, he's going to be a contender for the NL Cy Young. But you know, now you know you're looking at the Dodgers where, you know, obviously Walker Buehler and Clayton Kershaw are right there at the top of that rotation. You know, Kenta Maeda will still be around. And then they've got to figure out what they're doing with their young guys. You know, Julio Urias needs to be in the rotation and needs to make that start every fifth day. You know, you got Ross Stripling. Dustin May made a few starts this year. They'll have to decide what they think of him. And then they have another guy who we haven't seen yet by the name of Tony, I believe it's pronounced Gosselin, who's just another one of their prospects. So, you know, again, that's the one thing the Dodgers are blessed with is starting pitching. You know, is it possible they would let Ryu walk? You know, with as good as he's been this season? So, you know, we'll have to see. You know, then, you know, as we kind of keep running down the list here, you know, Marcelo Zuna is going to be a free agent for the Cardinals. You know, I mean, he's been okay. He really struggled in the second half of this year. But, you know, he's only 29. There's a lot of potential there. You know, the Cardinals have a lot of outfield prospects, along with we've seen Tommy Edman, who can play the outfield. So don't be surprised if this is one of the guys the Cardinals just kind of say, hey, okay, we'll see you later. You know, and then you wonder, you know, I wouldn't be actually be surprised to see this, but, you know, Jake Odorizzi hits the free agent market. He was really good for the Twins. 15-7 with a 3.51 ERA. That's quality stuff in the American League. So he'll probably have some suitors, but I wouldn't be surprised at all to see if he kind of ends up back in Minnesota. But again, you know, and I did see the Twins have announced that they plan on picking up Nelson Cruz's option for next year. So he'll be back. You know, the Yankees, we talked a little bit about Didi Gregorius yesterday. It seems to be looking at the fact that they may let Didi go. They'll also have to make the decision on Edwin Encarnacion, who obviously is still a gigantic power hitter, not a great average hitter anymore, but still a fantastic power hitter. You know, my guess is I think they have to buy him out. Yeah, here it is, $5 million buyout. I won't be surprised to see them buy him out and let him go. And then, you know, as we kind of cruise along, another interesting guy, you know, Abisail Garcia's had a fantastic year. Finally, after years of just being compared with Miguel Cabrera and he was the next Miggy, even though he never really had that power, he went to Tampa Bay and had a really good year on just, you know, the one-year deal. And you got to wonder if, you know, teams are going to see this potential and somebody is going to go, hey, let's give him a shot, and we'll have to see if he can stay healthy. But, you know, those are some of the, I guess what you would call the upper echelon guys. Here's some other names you could see out there on the free agent market. We'll start in the American League. The Astros have Wade Miley, Will Harris, Joe Smith, Hector Rondon, Colin McHugh, and Martin Maldonado. From the Yankees, you throw in Brett Gardner, Dellin Betances, Dan's guy Cameron Maben, and Austin Romine. The Rays, we had a couple more guys, Travis Dinald, who's had a career year in Tampa, and Eric Sogard. The Twins were looking at Kyle Gibson, Michael Pineda, Jonathan Scope, who I've always liked, Jason Castro, and Sergio Romo. The Braves have a couple decisions to make. Julio Teheran has $1 million buyout or a $12 million team option. Nick Markakis and Tyler Flowers both have $6 million deals for next year with $2 million buyouts. and Billy Hamilton has a $1 million buyout on his contract. Then you throw in Francisco Cervelli, Darren O'Day, Chris Martin, Brian McCann, who I believe is retiring, Aiden Echeverria, Josh Tomlin, Matt Joyce, and Jeremy Blevins. St. Louis has Adam Wainwright, who is another guy I believe it has announced he's going to retire. But then you got Michael Wacha and Matt Wieters. Adam Eaton has a couple option years that the Nationals will have to decide on if they want him for 9-5 this year. Ryan Zimmerman has an $18 million deal or a $2 million buyout. You got to kind of assume they're going to take that buyout, even though he's been a longtime National. $18 million is too much for Zimmerman. Yan Gomes has a $9 million deal for next year or a $1 million buyout. Sean Doolittle has a $6.5 million club option. They'll probably pick that up. But then you throw Howie Kendrick, Brian Dozier, another one of Dan's guys, Fernando Rodney, Asdrubal Cabrera, Gerardo Parra, Daniel Hudson, and Jeremy Hellickson out onto the free agent market. And then the Dodgers, besides the name, you know, the names we mentioned, they got Rich Hill, Russell Martin, David Fries, and Jed Jorko has a $1 million buyout. We're possibly looking at the faces of some of these playoff teams being much, much different, just kind of depending on how this market is going to go. And, you know, I mean, it, you know, obviously, you know, the bigger names like Cole and Rendon will have to see where they start dropping. And, you know, you do wonder if maybe the Cubs aren't as interested in dealing Chris Bryant if Philadelphia tries to fill that third base hole with Josh Donaldson for a couple years. So, you know, it could be. You know, it could be quite an interesting off season. You know, and I mean, Dan and I have said over and over, if the Angels want to contend, they need starting pitching. Is it possible they could try to add two of these guys? Could they add a Gerrit Cole and a Dallas Keuchel, or a Hyun-Jin Ryu and a Dallas Keuchel? You know, could they go out and attract both of those guys to come to the Angels? So, you know, you know, like I said, these teams could look incredibly different the next time we see them. So, you know, obviously you want to get those World Series wins while they, you know, while you can, because it's difficult to keep getting them.
Yeah, and, you know, the first one I want to touch on. Oh. Yeah, I mean, do they have to wait till after the World Series, or do they get that break in between the CS, the Championship Series, and the World Series to not announce who's their manager? But you know, you brought up the Cubs and trading Chris Bryant possibly. When you look at it, he's the only one who's really going to bring you back a lot of value. You know, if I'm, you know, Russell isn't bringing you back value. You know, I mean, for the way they dogged him.
If you wanted to move him.
Well, yeah, but you're not moving Javi Baez. But, you know, Addison Russell, what is he going to bring you back? Maybe a couple of single airs. I think everyone's seen who and how Kyle Schwarber is and how he plays, so I really don't see a whole lot of value coming back as he would have garnered had they traded him in 2017. So you're left with Chris Bryant. But do you really want to make that move? Do you really want to trade Chris Bryant or Javi Baez? I don't think so. I don't see it being that great of a move.
No, well, you know, if it's me and I do trade him, I'm not trading him to a National League team.
No.
You know, I don't want to see them, you know, however many times a year it is. You know, I know it's like 17 or 18 in your division, but, you know, even the other guys you got to see, I don't want to come across either of those guys. But, you know, I mean, my fear is the Bryant deal is kind of inevitable, because I just don't think they're going to be able to work out a contract with Scott Boras. You know, by the time Bryant hits his contract year, they're probably going to be asking for $40 million a year. And I just can't, you know, I don't think the Cubs will be in a position to afford that if they're going to keep the, you know, the Baezes, the Contreras, the Rizzo, you know, those kind of guys around. I don't think they can pay one guy that. So, but yeah, you know, it'll make for some, you know, some interesting off-season banter, I should say, you know, once we get going, you know, I mean, you know, as fun as the playoffs are, you know, the off-season can be a little weird as well. But you know, a lot of these teams could look marginally different next year.
Well, and then, you know, going back to the other topic you threw out there, I don't think it's an if on the Angels. I think it's an absolute must. If you sign, you need to go out there and get two pitchers. You obviously have that Mike Trout draw, you know, but I still don't think, I don't know, I don't think the MLB is like the NBA where you could be like, hey, don't you want to play with a guy like blah, blah, blah? I don't think MLB works that way. But I still think they have enough to kind of draw some people in, but what they really need is starting pitching. Unless they're able to get rid of Upton somehow, I doubt that'll happen. But I mean, as far as field position players go, you don't need any more. Maybe, you know, some, I don't want to say lower tier guys, but you don't want to put all that money invested into that. Kind of looking for guys maybe on a 1-2 year, depending on positions you need to field. I can't remember how the middle infield is going. I still feel like their outfield is locked as long as Trout's feet stay healthy. But I mean, you, for the Angels, you want to make some noise and kind of knock down the door of the A's and the Astros and put your A back into there. They need pitching. They need pitching big time.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, well, you know, the tough part with them is, you know, they've tried to sign pitching before and have had really bad luck with it. You know, I was trying to remember, you know, they went and signed a big lefty, and I'm drawing a blank on who his name, what his name was. But, you know, he was the top free agent pitcher.
Wasn't it C.J. Wilson from the Rangers after that series?
C.J. Wilson. Did you buy a Mazda from him or something? I think he has a dealership here in Chicago. But, yeah, you know, I mean, they went and signed him and paid him a boatload of money, and he was terrible. And it just kind of seems, you know, that's how their luck's been. But, you know, just imagine, you know, if they could land Garrett Cole, not only does it help them, but it hurts the Astros. So it closes that gap a little bit. You know, and then if you can convince a Dallas Keuchel or a Hyunjin Ryu to join you, you know, it's not a, you know, not a bad, you know, start there. I don't know, you know, I mean, it would make it easier to definitely fill in the rest of the rotation. But yeah, we'll just gonna have to kind of, you know, kind of see and definitely give us something to talk about. You know, and then obviously the other thing here, Dan, I just caught this. I think I saw this a little earlier. I'm going to see if I can get some stats here. But we're the way it's written here, Dan, Japanese slugger Yoshitomi Setsugo is going to be posted. All right, let me jump on his stats here, Dan. It looks like he is 26. He'll be 27 next month. This year he hit 272 with 29 homers, 79 RBIs in 131 games. He does have a career high of 44 homers. And he's been playing for the Yokohama Bay Stars in the Japanese Central League for the past 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, past 10 years. So yeah, wow, he started young. He's played
17.
A little third, and then most of the majority games in the outfield. He is a left-handed hitter, though, Dan. We got a lefty power guy. Is this another one of those things where we just decide he's going to the Yankees and we stop talking about him?
The Yankees have like 12 first basemen that are all great. They have Andujar at third.
Well, yeah.
And they have a completely locked outfield.
He could DH. So.
I know it's, I mean, I don't know. The whole issue for me, though, is, granted, it's never going to happen, but we don't really have any, no pun intended, translation for numbers. It's MLB ball.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. What is the effect on the extra 30 games, 31, and, you know, the difference in pitching, whether it's negative or positive. But I don't think we've ever seen, you know, a batter come from Japan, say a 279 batter, and turn around and, you know, it's just a career 379 hitter. So it doesn't happen. So I wish there was some way that we can get a little bit more of a translation. Number two, is he a Scott Boras guy yet, or how does that work? I don't know if he opened his offices in Japan yet.
Does he have to be posted first before he can get an agent, or how does that work out there? So,
I guess I never really looked into that portion of it.
Yeah, you know, the tough part with, you know, the Japanese guys is I believe we've seen more bad than good.
Yeah.
When it comes to it, but, you know, I think a lot of that falls on, you know, pitching, because I'm trying to think of, pitching-wise, I mean, obviously Ichiro is the first name that comes to mind, but, you know, Hideki Matsui was a really good player. Other than that, obviously the jury is still out on Ohtani. You know, other than that, if you think of an everyday player, Japanese player that you would consider good?
No, I mean, we definitely need that list to kind of pull it up. I mean, of course, if I were the truly, truly diehard Cub fan that I'm supposed to be, I would tell you how great Fukudome was. He was a great addition to the team. Don't get me wrong.
Start of the year, second half of the year, he was terrible. You know, like there's Nori Aoki, who was solid. You know, I mean, I wouldn't call it great.
Are you going into pitchers or just batters?
Just doing position players, because this guy's a position.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, I mean, other it's just a lot of guys who, you know, were kind of solid. I mean, you know, Kenji Jojima was a really solid catcher for the Mariners. You know, the White Sox had Tadahito Iguchi, who was very good at his job, which was to bat second and hit behind the runner, which, of course, we don't do anymore. So, you know, but, yeah, I mean, you know, other – I mean, there's as many kind of bombs as there, you know, there were, you know, anything else. I mean, there's a guy here by the name of Shusashi Shinjo, who played 3 years, two with the Mets and one with the Giants, and I don't even remember this guy.
I don't either.
So,
I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, it's great to get the international press, you know, which I think is too big of a factor in it. And I think that's what ends up kind of creating a life of its own. You know, because, I mean, when these guys come over, we haven't really seen anyone like Ichiro really succeed the way he did.
Right.
I mean, I don't know who told Ichiro to quit playing, but hell, I would have gone to a game, even if he went up there and went 0 for 12. I don't care. I'd have been standing there excited as can be to go see Ichiro. You know what I mean? But I don't know. I think they've put too much emphasis on the slugger coming out of Japan, especially with today's game, the way it's, you know, highlighted. You're expecting this guy to maybe the 239 batting average, everyone's just going to throw out the window. But
yeah,
all the new age people are expecting 45 home runs. And if he comes in,
yeah, you know,
and it's 32, it's like a bust.
You know, we've been promised that from Ohtani. We haven't seen it yet, but we've been promised that. The only other power hitter has been Hideki Matsuoka. You know, now he wasn't a gigantic power hitter by today's numbers. I think obviously with the baseball and everything, he would be, you know, much, much more of a, you know, a big time power hitter than he actually was back in his career. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I mean, he hit, what did he hit? He hit 175 home runs in the major leagues. So, you know, and he played 10 years. So he hit about 17, averaged about 17 home runs a year, you know, which now is terrible with the way things are set up. But, you know, back then it was okay. I mean, you wanted a guy closer to probably 20 a year. But, you know, I mean, you would take that. I just, you know, I just don't know. I mean, what does 29 homers in the Japan League translate in to baseball?
Yeah.
So,
you know, and then with where does he go? You know, like you said, is he a Yankee automatically? Are we putting him with the Yankees? I mean, there's so many determining factors as to what any team that's looking to sign him is going to put out there. But, and I'm not going to be like, oh, well, he's Japanese and he wants to be closer to the Pacific, so he's definitely going to land on a West Coast team. But, you know, we've seen that with Hideki Matsuoka, and I'm throwing my names, Masahiro Tanaka. You know, he went over to New York. The pitcher that went to Boston, but even Yu Darvish, you know, he came from Japan and went to Texas. So, well, I think some of these guys definitely might lean towards a West Coast team. It also depends on, you know, what their childhood growing up was like and what their impression of America was as to where they might choose to go. So there's a lot of factors, but I think if he posts, or when he does post, he's probably going to get a nice paycheck being that he's 27.
Yeah, you know, it definitely – you know, you kind of look at it, and I mean, there's going to be somebody out there willing to go, hey, let's give this guy some money and see what happens. And, you know, again, we'll, you know, you and I will be here to, if it doesn't work, to criticize it all the way. You know, because like I said, I mean, to me, I don't know about you, but are you sold on Ohtani yet as a hitter?
No.
So,
you know, and it's
yeah,
not being sold on him. Are you kind of asking, though, are you sold on the hype that came with it?
Yeah, maybe that's it more than anything, is just the, you know, the whole hype deal behind it. So,
but I think that's what kills some of these guys in the eye of the fans. SportsTimeRadio.com.